tips you should be sharing with your kids. I'll have 4 ways that you can capitalize on business growth opportunities, and I'll have tips on how you can speed up the sales cycle. It's Thursday, September 12th, 2019, and I'll have all that and more right now on Taking Care of Business. Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gannot, and this program is called Taking Care of Business. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. Before we do that, we check the weather. It's currently 81 degrees, and today we're going to have partly cloudy skies with thunderstorms rolling in later in the day, a high of 83 and a low of 56. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 71 and a low of 57. For Saturday, it'll be mostly cloudy with showers late in the day and a high of 78 and a low of 64. And for Sunday, we're going to have partly cloudy skies, a high of 84 degrees and a low of 61. And a current check of the financial market shows the Dow Jones Industrial is up 104.65 to 27,241.69. The NASDAQ is up 48.85 to 8,218.52. S&P 500 also up 13.63 to 3,014.52. Oil is down $1.23 to $54.55 per barrel. And gold is up $7.90 to $1,510.60 an ounce. All right. Well, once again, good to welcome everybody. My name is Jim Gannot, the host of the program Taking Care of Business. So glad you could join me as we get together every Thursday at noon to talk about issues affecting business. And let's jump right into it. Before we do that, if you are listening right now, there's a good chance that you're doing so on a computer, on a tablet, on a cell phone. What we'd like you to do is open up a new browser and go to Facebook.com and then search our page, which is Taking Care of Business with Jim Gannot. Like and follow that page so that you'll get updates periodically through the week on anything news breaking that affects business. For instance, last night, T. Boone Pickens died. Posted that there because he's an icon in the business world. He's done a lot from developing an energy company to being a corporate raider back in the 80s and 90s. So it's important that, you know, you're made aware of what's going on in business. Anything major happening in business, I'll alert you there first, and then we'll follow up on the program. The Business Quote of the Week is brought to you each week at this time by Crown Trophy of Flemington. Typically what I do here is we'll use either sports stars, celebrities, political people, religious leaders, anybody that has a quote that I think is applicable to business usually can be found in the Business Quote of the Week. And as I mentioned, it is brought to you every week at this time by Crown Trophy of Flemington. This week, we're going to go to Olympic champion Michael Phelps. And I really like this one as it applies to business. He says, "I think goals should never be easy. They should force you to work, even if they are uncomfortable at the time." Now, how many of you out there, I always follow up the Quote of the Week with a question to see, how does it impact you? Do you agree with it? Do you see it as something that applies to you, or do you just not care and you know, it's not a big deal? But I think in business in particular, and I talk about this every year in the first show in January, your business goals. What do you want to do this year? And I periodically will check back with you to see how you're doing on your goals. And a lot of times people fall short, and it's kind of like a New Year's resolution. Everybody falls short after about 2 weeks, and usually with business goals, you might fall short a month or two later. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I want you to always kind of like refocus and try to get back into it. And so when you make a goal, I don't want it to be something simple like, you know, I want to grow by, you know, $100 this year. I want it to be that big, hairy, audacious goal. I want to grow by $100,000. I want to grow by 15%, you know, something of that nature. And I think that's what Michael Phelps' quote speaks about when he says, I think goals should never be easy. They should force you to work, even if they are uncomfortable at the time. Talked with a lot of businesses, and they'll say that they're working towards their goals, and it's hard, and they're pushing through. And what I tell everybody is just keep pushing, because when you get through to the other side, when you've accomplished that goal, you look back at the mountain you just climbed, you say, that was nothing. I have a niece who about 2 weeks ago joined the United States Air Force, and I wrote her a bunch of motivational quotes that she could tuck, you know, under her pillow at night or something and look at them when things got hard. And the goal was, and what I told her was, no matter how hard it gets, whether you're running 5 miles with a pack on your back or having to break down a machine gun in 2 minutes or something like that, no matter how hard it gets, keep trying, keep plugging, and eventually you're going to get it. You'll master the task, and you're going to feel so much better when you do. So she wrote a letter home to her mother and father, and in it, the final sentence, I think, was, don't worry, I'm going to make it. And there's nothing more that could have put my mind at ease than having her have that self-realization that she was going to make it. Now, of course, yesterday we observed the 18th anniversary of 9/11. Somebody, I don't remember who it was, but somebody, you know, came into my store and said, not jokingly, they were serious about it. I think sometimes we confuse occasions or holidays, and they said, happy 9/11 day. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, right? This is not a happy day in any way. It's a memorial. It's a remembrance day, but definitely not. Let's not confuse it, what it really is and what really happened on that day. Some people are calling it for it to be called Patriot Day. I think just taking the time to remember is more important than anything. Of course, I've told you, you know, my story with 9/11, how I was supposed to be in the building, and then that night joined my brother-in-law in a caravan to bring the first pieces of equipment into the Brooklyn Navy Yard. No need to go through that again. But, you know, that's a day that always brings a very somber reflection for me. So when somebody says, happy 9/11, I lost it. I didn't lose it on them, but I was like, you got to be kidding me. Now, tomorrow could be a bad day for a lot of you if you suffer, and I'm going to try to get this all out right. If you suffer from paraskevidecatriphobia, that's the fear of Friday the 13th. And a lot of people confuse that with triskaidekaphobia, which is the fear of the number 13. But the actual fear of Friday the 13th is paraskevidecatriphobia, I guess. It's as close as I'm going to get with that one. So do you fear Friday the 13th? Is there anything you do differently? If you wake up and you're driving your car and it's Friday the 13th and you see a black cat, are you going to go home and hide under the covers, or do you just keep pushing through the day? So good luck to anybody that may have that fear of Friday the 13th. Hopefully you'll get through it. And then you'll be able to talk to us on the 14th, if you will. I want to talk to you for a few minutes about how to stay committed to your goals. And in 2010, entrepreneur Derek Sivers gave a TED Talk, and it went viral because of his surprising goal-making advice. He said, keep your goals to yourself. Now, citing psychology research, Sivers posted that when you share your goals with others, it makes you feel less motivated to do the actual hard work necessary to achieve them. But new research out of the Ohio State University could turn his frequently quoted wisdom on its head, finding that people tend to be more committed to their goals after they share them with someone who they see as being of higher status or whose opinion they respect. Now, if you don't care about the opinion of whom you tell, it doesn't really affect your desire to persist, which is really what goal commitment is all about, says Howard Klein, the lead author and professor of management and human resources at The Ohio State University's Fisher College of Business. You want to be more dedicated and unwilling to give up on your goal, which is more likely when you share that goal with someone that you look up to. Now, for one part of the study, which is published in the Journal of Applied Psychology, 171 undergraduate college students were given a basic computer task that involved moving a slider across the screen as many times as they could over a period of time. From there, they set a goal number of times they would complete the task on the next round. Researchers then sent a lab assistant to review their work, who either revealed they were a doctoral-level student or said they were a student employee at a community college. When the student participants shared their target goal with the so-called doctoral-level student, they were more likely to reach the goal. And on the flip side, those who relayed their goals to the individual who they believed was just a community college student did not perform better. Similarly, the group who didn't tell their goal to anyone also didn't see any improvement. In another experiment, 292 college students set ambitious goals for their grades at the beginning of the semester and shared them. Again, those who divulged their goals with someone of higher status tended to be more committed to their grades by the end of the semester. Researchers say that sharing your goal with a higher up does more than keep you accountable. It also makes you more motivated, simply because you care what this person thinks about you. For example, telling a mentor or manager about your hopes to get promoted could light a fire under you more than, say, a peer or a friend. Of course, this advice depends on the goal and the person, and while evaluation apprehension, the term researchers use to describe anxiety caused by being supervised, could make you more driven, it can also have a negative effect on your ability or willingness to crush that goal. We didn't find it in this study, but it is possible that you may create so much anxiety in trying to impress someone that it could interfere with your performance, Klein said in the press release. So when you make a goal, and we always go through the exercise in the first show of the year where I talk to you about making goals for the year, and that could be, but they have to be specific. We use the SMART technology or SMART theory: specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and have a time element involved. When you make those goals, who do you tell? Who do you share them with? And it's not enough to just write on paper, I want to grow the business by 20%. I want to grow the business by $200,000. I want to buy this piece of equipment. I want to add one more person to my staff. Are you sharing that with anybody whom you look up to? Could be a friend, a mentor, a leader in your industry. It could be your staff. But are you sharing that so that it becomes real and that you can be held accountable for it? A few years ago at one of the Crown Trophy meetings, we partnered up with people that we respected and said, would you be my peer mentor? And some people came to me. I went to people that I respected, and we would lay out our goals, and we would call each other periodically every 2 weeks or so just to see how each other was doing. And when you knew that phone call was coming, if you had told them 2 weeks prior that you were going to add, say, 100 names to your email marketing list, did you do it or did you fall woefully short? And if you made that phone call and you were short on that goal, then they would ask why. Why didn't you make that goal? And all of a sudden, the accountability was there, and it forced you to perform for the next goal that you would call them on in the next 2 weeks. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. We're going to step away for a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to have 10 money-saving tips that you should be teaching your kids, and I know I wish my parents taught me. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. I'm Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington. So glad you could join me as we creep ever closer to that 8th year anniversary of the show coming up in the first week of October. Looking forward to that. Trying to line up some special guests or interview for that day, and hopefully you'll be able to join us when you get closer to that date on Friday the 13th. Just following up, I got a couple of comments on Facebook Live. I want to say hello to Brian up in Massachusetts for watching, and also to Jim Minadeo, who commented that when we talked about the fear of Friday the 13th, he actually broke his finger when he was a kid on Friday the 13th. So sorry to hear that, and hopefully that's all gotten better for you. Now, talking about kids, this is something that the story I did last week really hit home, and the more people I talk to, I'm getting more and more scared for our country's future and for just about everybody I know's future. So the story last week was that 41% of Americans have nothing saved for retirement. And then the following 26% only have about up to $25,000 saved for retirement. Now, if you have nothing saved for retirement and you declare on when you're 65, I'm going to retire, you're going to be retired for about 2 hours. And then you're going to realize you need money. So what I encourage every young person I meet, 15, 16, 17, it doesn't matter when they start, but I really encourage young people, especially when they get a first job, go talk to a financial planner and open a 401k. Go to your bank, open a 401k or a Roth IRA or something like that. But so many people don't do that because they'd rather have the money now. They'd rather take that trip, buy that car, and do experiential things rather than save money. And to me, that's a little bit scary. So again, a fifth of Americans don't have a penny saved in their accounts. In fact, 40% of Americans would struggle to pay for an emergency $400 expense. Now, the Americans who are saving, most of them are filing away less than the recommended 10% of each paycheck. With so many adults struggling to save, it can be difficult to focus on money saving for kids. However, ensuring children are financially literate helps to set a solid money management foundation. And so here are 10 tips to help you get started. We're going to repost this on the Facebook page after the show so that people can research it then. And we'll also have the replay on the Facebook page tomorrow, so at least you'll be able to go back and maybe even have your kids listen to this. So the first thing that they're suggesting you do is to give your children an allowance. Now, some children can learn from abstract concepts, but this is a rarity. So when it comes to saving money for kids, they learn best from seeing and doing. By providing children with an allowance, no matter how small it is, they now have money that they can manage and spend on their own. There are many different ways to determine how much a child should get and how often. Most parents will pay them weekly. And according to USA Today, here's how much money American children receive on average each week. And it also depends on the level of chores. Ages 4 to 6 will receive anywhere from $3.76 to $5.24. Ages 7 to 9 receive $6.69 to $7.80. Ages 10 to 12 receive $8.10 to $9.85. And ages 13 and 14 and up receive $10.79 to $12.26. A heck of a lot more money than the quarter I used to get when I was a kid. Now, one of the things that people should encourage their kids to do, similar to the Profit First program when we had Mike Michalowicz on the program, is to take a certain percentage of that money and put it away. It's okay to say, you know, I'm going to use my experience. When I was a kid, you got a quarter, you went over to Williams Grocery Store in North Branch, you bought a pack of baseball cards, and you opened it up, looked at it with your friends, you traded, and there went your allowance. But you did get a nice piece of very sugary bubble gum out of the deal. But you want to have something put away for what we're going to call long-term savings. So maybe the kid wants to buy a bike. Maybe they need a better Xbox machine or something like that. Have them contribute to it, but understand and explain to them that they have to help save for it. Now, you can also help them earn money Money saving for kids may be especially difficult if they don't get an allowance regularly or at all. Earning their own money can fix this, and recycling can help. They can not only collect the recyclable goods at home, but they may even ask the neighbors for permission to collect theirs as well. Then once a month, an adult can drive them to the recycling plant. Every plant is different, so be sure to do some research. Earth 911 resources can get you started depending on their age. Other options include mowing lawns, pet sitting, babysitting, or helping out elderly people. They can also rely on the good old lemonade stand in the heat of summer. We did this with my two sons. When Brandon turned 10, he wanted money. And so he was always focused on running a business. So we started a business. It was called Brandon's Vacation Help Service. And he passed flyers around our neighborhood, just a one-block neighborhood. And he would, if you went away on vacation, he would, or even for a day or a night going out to the movies or a play or something, he would walk your dog, feed your dog, bring in your mail, bring in your newspaper, and water plants, feed goldfish, anything that had to happen. People got so used to him coming that in the first year, as a 10-year-old, he made $600 just working around the neighborhood. In the second year, he was up over $1,300, and in the third year, he was at $1,800. He was like 12 years old, and he had, you know, over $2,400 in the bank. Eventually, when he got his own job, he sold the business to his younger brother for a dollar, who then started that whole cycle all over again. It taught him a couple of things. It taught him that getting paid for hard work is a good thing. We made them save money. We even got to the point where these kids were invoicing the neighbors. So they would say, okay, five dog walks, that's $25. Five newspapers, there's another five. Five plant waterings, there's another five. And they would have to go up and collect the money. So it's made them very financially responsible, and I've never had to worry about them just blowing money on things that they didn't need. That's a great way, if you can do that and if you trust your neighbors in your neighborhood, to start a small business for your children. Call it Vacation Help Service. And again, it doesn't have to be when they go away for a week or two, but, you know, even one day. And we had people that would have to go to a wedding in New York City. They have a dog at home. They didn't want the newspaper in the driveway. They didn't want the mail stacking up. So they would call Brandon to do that. Make saving automatic. So Forbes believes that when saving is automatic, people set aside larger sums of money. When there are necessary expenses and compelling desires you could spend money on instead, it becomes harder and harder to make the conscious decision to put the money away for future use. And while there are countless options for parents to automate saving money, children don't have nearly as many. Still, parents can step in to help. If a child receives $5 per week for an allowance, a parent may offer to automatically put 10% of that into a savings account for them before they ever get it. You can also open a high-yield account. When tackling money saving for kids, they need a safe place to store their cash. Opening a high-yield savings account for your child also helps to teach them about financial institutions and how they work. Even when interest rates are low, it is still higher than having none at all from a piggy bank or under the mattress. Still, there are accounts that children can use, such as Capital One's 360 Kids with a 1% annual percentage yield and Alliant Credit Union Kids with 2% APY. Parents may also consider opening accounts themselves and adding the children as joint users or beneficiaries to take advantage of better rates. You also want to encourage your kids to have big goals. Is there something your child really, really wants more than anything else in this world? No matter how expensive it is, encourage them to save toward it. For big ticket items such as a smartphone or even a car, you can promise to match their contributions up to a certain percentage. Encourage them to put a picture of what they want somewhere visible in their room. Keep them motivated. This makes money saving for kids less expensive for the parent, too. How so? Parents get an internal discount as the child pays a portion of the bill. Clear the browser cookies. You want to save toward big goals, and that's great. But if your child is only saving money to spend it at a later date, this may present a problem down the line. They may purchase all the things they want, but then have no emergency funds. If children are constantly looking out for the next big or best thing, the browser cookies and the ads they inspire may be at fault. Show kids how to clear these on their phone and their computer on a regular basis. A simple Google or YouTube search can provide step-by-step instructions. Clear the cache and make sure that the cash that they are saving is going to the bank. Then don't be shy about delaying the actual purchase. What children want changes frequently. The video games kids are dying to have 2 weeks ago is quickly replaced by something else the following month. Delaying the purchase may help children to recognize that they don't always need to buy the things they initially wanted at that moment. That desire can change, but the money would already be gone. Waiting even just 1 week before making purchases can make all the difference. This is one of the best lessons a parent can follow when trying to combine the difficult mix of money and kids. Teach them basic minimalism. According to Today, millennials often go to extremes to spend less and save more. Following minimalistic principles, some live under two-year buying bans, moving into tiny homes, and can count all their possessions. Not every parent can take minimalism to this extent, but teaching children to focus less on material things is a good start. Regular yard sales can also help kids get rid of things they no longer use. It may also cause them to question some of the things they buy. They may notice that they get less for the item when selling it used than when they paid for it brand new. And you can also try to pay your allowances in a lump sum. When children receive an allowance every week, waiting another week after they have run out of money gets them into the habit of living paycheck to paycheck. Instead, tackle saving money for kids by giving them a lump sum payment at the end of the month. If a child gets $5 per week, that works out to roughly $20 per month. After a while of running out of money earlier in the month, your child may eventually learn the importance of delayed gratification and saving for a rainy day. And don't be shy about lending your kids money. Now, this is probably the last thing you expect to see on a list that tackles money saving for kids. However, lending your kids money can teach them about credit and interest. When addressing money and kids, you will need to find a fair way to decide how much credit they should have access to, and you can base this on their age, their repayment history, and sense of responsibility. The most important thing is that you should charge interest and garnish your repayments from their allowance automatically. So be sure to let them know what the terms are before they accept. The bottom line here is that saving money for kids is hard because they may not have yet learned the importance of delayed gratification. Some people may even go as far as saying that money and kids are a bad combination. And while this is sometimes true, with creativity, patience, and perseverance, parents can create America's next generation of financially literate adults. Love that story when I read it. It tied so well with some of the things that I taught my kids about running their own business when they were 10 and the money that they were making. And now at 27 and 22 years old, my kids don't spend money. You know, it's never been about having the next video game or having the best car or anything like that. It's always there. And in fact, my 22-year-old just opened up his own 401k, and every day he's looking at the stock market. Is it up? Is it down? How's he doing? You know, so that's the type of financial responsibility that I love that my kids have. And when I see other kids that don't have that and they're just spend, and you follow the story from last week where 41% of Americans have zero, not a little bit, zero saved for retirement, that scares the living hell out of me. And I don't understand what people are thinking that you wouldn't be putting money away. I'll never forget when I worked at Atlantic Mutual or at Chubb Insurance Company. And when we were first hired, all of us went down into this big auditorium, and there was a financial planner there. And he showed us this graph of how if you put 10% away of your paycheck and the company's going to match 5%, this big graph swelled up. And by the age of 65, you had $1 million or something like that. I wanted that. So we started investing. My wife did the same. And, you know, so I can feel comfortable that we'll be okay when we retire. Hearing stories where people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, even 50s have nothing saved, couldn't afford an emergency like in the story of $400, that just scares the hell out of me. And Americans can and have to do better, and it's never too late. Even if you're 55 now, start putting money away. Set it up in payroll deduction and take advantage of it. You will thank me for this in about 15 or 20 years. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. I'm going to step away for a quick news break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how improving your customer service now can help your business in the future. We'll be right back.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Rules governing a possible impeachment of President Trump approved by the democratically controlled House Judiciary Panel. A party line vote essentially setting parameters for how the committee would handle the impeachment proceedings. New York Democrat Jerry Nadler chairs the panel.
Under the procedures outlined in this resolution, we will hold hearings that allow us to further consider the evidence against the president.
The ranking Republican on the panel, Doug Collins, called it an unnecessary step designed to just keep the word impeachment in the headlines.
Today was simply to get you all here to cover something that is really, frankly, a snooze fest most of the time.
New Jersey could become the first state of the nation to ban vaping. The Senate president there is saying he will propose legislation that would phase out all vaping products. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn for Amp Fest 19. Amp Fest 19 is the most entertaining political event and Trump Fest of the year for any conservative who wants to be empowered and entertained, or for any Trump superfan who wants to just have a blast. If that's you, head to the Trump Doral Hotel on October 10th to 12th in sizzling, sexy Miami, Florida. Headliner speakers at Amp Fest 19 include Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Dinesh D'Souza, Charlie Kirk of the Turning Point USA, Brandon Straka of the Walkaway Movement, and of course, yours truly, Wayne Allyn Root. I love that guy. But this is more than a traditional political event or Trump Love Fest. Amp Fest 19 features a Texas Hold'em poker tournament, golf tournament, comedy night, pool party, yacht party, fashion show, movie screening, Women for Trump social, and prayer breakfast hosted by Alveda King. To register for Amp Fest 19, just go to AmericanPriority.com. That's AmericanPriority.com. It all happens October 10th to 12th at the Trump Doral in sizzling, sexy Miami. I'll see you there. AmericanPriority.com.
Can Democratic
life. Taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime. What else?
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. I'm Jim Gano, your host, the owner of Crown Trophy of Flemington. So glad you could join me this afternoon as we get together and, again, marching forward towards our eighth-year anniversary coming up in the first week of October. Looking forward to that, and hopefully you've enjoyed the program over the years. And as we get closer to that eight-year mark, if there's any either stories that have impacted you or your business and you'd like to share them with me so that we can review them over that program, by all means, do so. Haven't planned anything special. Not sure what we're going to do. It may just be a regular show. But if there's something special that has clicked with you and you want to either talk about it again or review it, we can certainly do that. Let's talk about how improving your customer service now can help your business in the future. So the question is, can shifting your commitment to customer service today truly have an impact on the future of your business? And it's common to hear about the importance of customer experience. When your customers are happy, your businesses are happy. But have you considered there's another reason why it's important to have good customer service in your business? It turns out that investing in shoring up your customer service strategy now can help improve your business prospects for the future. And to help your business make moves now to help future-proof your business in any economic climate, there's several tips that you should be heeding. And there's two leaders that will probably kickstart what you're thinking and how to put your customer service efforts into overdrive. Harry Poole is the vice president of client services at Alexandria, Virginia-based RedPeg, a brand experience marketing agency. His company invests heavily in the overall client relationship, moving technology to the back burner while other businesses might have put tech at the forefront. We can't become overly reliant on technology, he says. Regardless of how much easier technology has made things, we've really made it a priority to be present with our clients and develop human connections and relationships through as much FaceTime as possible. The real value of customer service comes from clients seeing businesses they engage with as partners and not vendors. That implies a deep relationship where companies make an effort to learn about their clients' businesses on every level. If we can be well positioned with our clients before things potentially go bad, we are then seen as part of the solution to navigate the challenging times rather than one of the things that need to be part of cost cutting. For Matt Kaywood, who's the CEO and co-founder of Transit Screen, a Washington, D.C.-based software company known for its real-time displays of mobility options, there's an additional reason for his company has invested so heavily in customer service, and that's industry strength. You can have the best product, but if you don't provide the right kind of support, then you're going to have a difficult time becoming a top competitor throughout an industry, he says. The client support his team at Transit Screen creates with its customers begets glowing testimonials, one of the company's most powerful sales tools. Satisfying one customer creates opportunities for exposure. Your existing client could have contacts for another business that you can sell to and pass along a glowing review, says Kaywood. You can go on and on about how great your product is, but what people really want to see before they buy is how real users enjoy it. The relationship-based service culture these two leaders have created in their respective businesses highlights why it's important to have good customer service. But their examples also demonstrate how shifting your customer service strategies now can help secure more business in the future. And shoring up your customer service strategies, Poole and Kaywood are ready with actionable advice to help your business make meaningful adjustments in your customer service strategies. Here are their best tips and the ones they use in their own companies to use customer service as a future-proofing tool. And I like that term, future-proofing. If you listen to the evening news over the last 2 or 3 months, you're starting to hear that R word creep back into the conversation. Everybody's predicting that in the next 6, 12, 18 months, we could be back into a recession. If that happens, what typically happens in business? Companies spend less money on promotion, marketing, and sales. Companies stop hiring. So there's a contraction, if you will, in business. Like, let's just ride this out, wait it out, and then we'll be better. And then we'll hire more people. But now what he's talking about by future-proofing is the service that you're providing in the good times is what could potentially keep those contracts in place during negative times. The first thing they tell you to do is listen. Now, it seems intuitive, right? Yet sometimes businesses are all too ready with solutions without genuinely listening to hear the challenges that their clients need help solving. Legendary service begins with your ears, not your PowerPoint deck. We need to try to get insights from our clients to help guide our thinking in terms of how we solve a challenge for them. We won't always have the answers or solutions, but we can find it if we spend more time listening than talking, says Poole. You want to also focus on your upfront work. And this sounds like common sense, but oddly enough, there are many companies that don't make important information easily accessible for customers. Now, Matt Kaywood says, you can have the best product, but if you don't provide the right kind of support, then you're going to have a difficult time becoming a top competitor throughout the industry. So make sure your clients have what they need to succeed from day one, including simple things like access to the FAQ portion of a web page, customer portals, and even how-to videos to get them up and running with ease. Finally, schedule a visit. Actually, not finally, but schedule a visit. Now, while company budget, office locations, and customer locations are factors for in-person visits, taking the time to meet your customers face-to-face can reassure customers in any economy that you're committed to the relationship. It's easy to get lost in the confusion of emails and rescheduled phone calls, but meeting the people behind the emails will only improve your conversations moving forward. You also have to communicate. This is key in any business. Don't save your client outreach for times when problems arise. If there's a problem, or if you sense there could be a problem on the horizon, start the communication early, before it begins to snowball, says Poole. Things are going well, and you forecast more good results ahead, communicate that early as well. Something as simple as if a customer emails you an order. Now, you may just say, great, we got an order from Mr. Smith. Perfect. And you start processing that order. But what Mr. Smith wants to know is, did you receive my email? Is my order in process? When can I expect delivery? So how hard would it be after Mr. Smith sends you that email to just write a quick note saying, dear Bob, received your email. We're working on completing your order. We anticipate a ship date of, and we'll send you a copy of the invoice in a separate email. Now he's resting at ease. He's done his job. He's relying on you to do your job. It's just about communication. But so many companies wait until there's a problem. They wait until they get a call from the vendor that says, the shipment's been lost, the shipment's been damaged, we can't meet the deadline, we've run out of raw goods, raw materials. Don't be that business. Communicate, and communicate early and often throughout the process. You want to start a cadence. When we talk about communication, Kaywood doesn't think businesses should wait until customers reach out to them. You can't assume that someone will reach out to you, and you shouldn't make the customer feel like they have to do all the work after making a purchase. So make sure your customer service team has a continued and scheduled process for staying in touch with clients. This makes continuous service a given in the relationship instead of during an emergency situation. And I mentioned this term before, but let's do it again. Act as a partner. To shift out of that transactional mindset, Poole suggests thinking of customers as partners. Partners implies a relationship, not a bottom line. It's important that we don't treat clients like transactions, but instead like long-term partners that can grow together, he says. Partners are in it for the long haul, which is likely the future-proofing your business craves. From Poole and Kaywood's tips, it's easy to see why good customer service is important to any business. It's perhaps the most powerful resource your business can cultivate to make you indispensable in any economy. I have a competitor in my space that has probably the worst customer service of anybody I've ever heard of. And I get more customers coming to me, driving 30, 40 miles out of their way to do business with me because they won't do business with him. I love it. Keep up the good work. You know, keep giving horrible customer service. And if people keep coming to me, they're going to get, you know, served exceptionally well because my staff, that's how they've been trained. I've always used the term partner, not customer, not client, or friend. I don't use the term they're a client. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an accountant. So they're not clients. Yes, in fact, they are customers, but we don't want to treat them like that. We get involved with them. We get to know them as best as we possibly can. If someone tells us that they're upset because the Giants lost or they have to go to back to school night or their kid is sick or the kid has a recital coming up, we want to follow that up, you know, a week or two later. Hey, how was the recital? Oh, it was great. Yeah, here, let me show you a picture. That's the kind of making that personal connection makes it so much harder for them to walk away from you during downtime. So make sure that you are getting personal with your customers and you're treating them like a partner, not a customer, not a client. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. When we come back, we're going to have four ways that you can capitalize on business growth opportunities. We'll be right back.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Aw, you lucky dog, you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. I'm Jim Gano, your host, with you every Thursday at this time, a little after noon o'clock, as we get together to talk about one of my favorite subjects, and that is business and the operation of business. I want to talk to you for a minute about four ways that you can capitalize on business growth opportunities. These tips are going to help you keep your business growth from stalling or help create opportunities for advancement. And for small and medium-sized businesses, owners looking to scale, working capital is king. Business credit cards can be a useful tool when you're just starting out, but managing cash flow with the additional expenses that follow business growth can be a challenge. Business owners who succeed are prepared to meet opportunities as they arise. Now, whenever I deal with a company that runs into trouble or enter an unfamiliar new space in their business, I often turn to people that have been there before for advice. So I have a couple of people that I know that I can get on the phone or text message and say, hey, this is what we're thinking of doing. How will this work? And I also ask the client, who do you know in your space? Who's successful? Who, if you're at this tier, they're at this tier. How can we get a hold of them and get some advice for them? So now while you're thinking about tapping into your community, there's a couple of tips that can help. The first is to identify what your customer values. So often in business, your biggest assets are people, not products and services. And those who become your customers have valuable insights about your business that you can't find anywhere else. Some of your biggest growth opportunities come from your own customers, that word of mouth referral. Now, I talk to my customers or potential customers to identify the problems they're facing and then think about the simplest ways to leverage the strengths and networks I have to create the solutions they're looking for. Extra funds could help if you say yes to new business opportunities, hire more staff, or consolidate debt. For problems are just opportunities in disguise. We've all heard that before. You may not notice them right away, but your customers do. So leverage their feedback. Focus on people and look to improve their experience, which in turn improves your business. Identify what a customer values and is willing to pay for, then test those ideas. Compare them against your market and ask yourself if you can compete that way. You also want to stay attuned to the market. Now, when preparing to scale, make sure you understand the market. At your when you're dealing in either a new space or in an existing space, said this 100 times on this program, you have to know everything about your industry. For me, sometimes it's new technology, new equipment, new players, new vendors, new products. You know, but whatever your industry is, get to know, A, who the competition is, who the players are, and what they're doing that's better than you. So you can do your own market research, and that'll provide you the best opportunity for you to see what opportunities are on the horizon. Identify low-hanging fruit first and get in the rhythm of testing those ideas. Lock down your main model and then do it well, and then go on to the bigger opportunities and expand. Low-hanging fruit could be something like a simple new product. If you think back a few years ago, what they call them, fidget spinners or something like that, they were all the rage. And in my business, where we sell promotional products, it made sense to start selling these things to people and, you know, putting their logo on it. And wherever I went, I saw some kids spinning something, so made a lot of money selling fidget spinners. So, again, and then it died out over time. Now we're looking for what is the next thing. You should be doing the same thing in your industry as well. Keep a close eye on the market for business growth opportunities. Look for opportunities that have the potential to benefit you and your company as the market becomes more efficient. Stay attuned with the market, which will also keep you ahead. And this is where I talk about don't wait 6 months and then read a couple of magazines to see what's going on. Every day, be researching your marketplace. If your success depends on the market maintaining its current levels of efficiency, then your business will be pushing against the tide and less likely to succeed. The best opportunities are those where you can introduce new market-wide efficiencies first. Start small. You don't have to make a big investment. You don't have to change everything about your business in order to have an impact. So take on challenge is par for the course when seeking business growth, but you don't have to go big every time. To ensure that you have the working capital necessary to scale and the right places or the right processes in place, start small. When considering ways to leverage your strengths to produce impact and profits, tackle manageable ideas to start. Identify again the low-hanging fruit and get the rhythm of testing those ideas. Lock down the main model and do it well, then go on to bigger opportunities. This, what that means, very simple, is if you can handle something small and do it better than anybody, or to the best, and you're always looking for better efficiencies, you'll do very well. But again, that may lead to a larger scale project of a similar product or service, and then you'll know we have to take this model and make it this model. Find business opportunities that don't require enormous scale before you can make your first dollar. This allows you to begin generating revenue early in the business cycle, which both validates the business concept and also produces cash flow that can be reinvested. Number four, prepare financially. Positioning yourself for business growth opportunities is just as important as finding them. And for many small and medium-sized business owners, funding can be the biggest obstacle to attaining opportunity. Financial preparation ensures that you can afford big-ticket items and still have the working capital and cash flow that you need to scale. Good old-fashioned savings can go a long way in helping with this, and when you see an opportunity, you may have to cut out the frills and keep money in the bank for a rainy day. Going back to the story earlier about helping kids save money, you too want to save money, and you want to do it. We talked about the profit first plan. So if you had a bank account for, say, equipment purchases or raw material purchases, and there was money there that would help fund this new adventure, do it. So save like crazy and build what we call an innovation fund so that you can invest in problems that you want to solve that will yield a return down the road. Also see creative partnerships if you don't have the revenue on your own. Sometimes a partner will fund the seed money you need to help build your product and maintain a financially viable business. It's not that if that's not doable, then look at investors or bank loans. Maintaining a good relationship with your financial institution is a good way to remain stable. Business loans and small business credit cards can provide benefits to keep you afloat. Building a good enough business is the key to financial security, while maintaining a strong vision helps plan for the future. Debt funding sources like sound business fundamentals but aren't terribly concerned with vision. High-risk equity investors like angels and VCs invest in vision, product, and market size. Strong vision combined with basic business performance keep both funding sources as options to you. And when it comes to business growth, preparation, cash flow, and working capital are a few big factors to consider. Leveraging your network, listening to your customers, starting small, and seeking financial stability may just be the keys to unlocking the opportunities that you need and will help you to succeed. So, you know, in any business, I think you have to look at, like, what's not so much what's the next big thing, but what's the one thing I'm not doing that I could be doing. And in my business, there's a lot of different ways that we can add product relatively inexpensively. And is there a talent that you possess that may help your business? For me, I'm a pretty darn good woodworker. And I had a gentleman come to me. His son is very good at soccer, and he wanted to create this large metal shelf. And he had designed it to the point where it's 7 feet long. I said, that's not doable because most houses don't have walls that are 7 feet long. So I redesigned it and drew it up for him, and I said, how about this? And we stacked the metals, and, you know, sure enough, he liked it, and it came out to about 36 inches. And they said, okay, when can you have that done? So I'm building that in my workshop at home now. So, again, that's another opportunity for me that most trophy stores don't have. If you see opportunities, the opportunity to buy out a competitor, the opportunity to partner with a competitor that may have a better account but needs help with fulfillment, ask to partner with them. Either invite them in to partner with something you're working on in the hopes that they'll do the same for you down the road, or they may see – I've had other trophy stores that will come to me and say, look, we don't want this job. It's 1,000 pieces. It's too big for us. We know this is in your wheelhouse. You know, you take it. And I'll give them like a finder's fee, couple hundred bucks, but, you know, they're happy with that, and I'm happy with the rest of the job. So if you want to be that person in your industry, then do that as well. Plenty of opportunities out there for growth. You have to find them, and they're not always going to just fall into your lap. I also like the comment about starting small. I know a woman who always is going for big projects, you know, and I told her one time, I said, who's the most prolific hitter in baseball? And she said, Babe Ruth. And I said, wrong. Babe Ruth struck out more times than he got home runs. So I said, it's Pete Rose, 4,255 hits. He concentrated on the singles, and yet he's the person with the most hits in Major League history. I'd rather you be focusing on being a Pete Rose than a Hank Aaron or a Babe Ruth. Because the more times you get on base, the more opportunities you have to score. So try that mentality. Just keep chipping away. Keep building your email database every day, and keep focusing on growing your business a little bit at a time. And eventually you're going to look back and say, this got a little bit bigger than I anticipated. But it's with small, controlled growth. You don't want big – you don't want to hit home runs all the time, because that becomes highly unmanageable. In sports, in Major League Baseball, the Yankees, Twins, and Astros lead their division in the American League, while the Braves, Cardinals, and Dodgers lead their divisions in the National League. In NASCAR news, Kevin Harvick won last week's Brickyard 400 and got to kiss the bricks with his team and family. The playoffs begin this week with the first of 10 races to determine the 2019 Monster Energy Series champion. This week, the teams head to Las Vegas for the South Point Casino 400 Sunday at 7 p.m. Driver Paul Menard has announced his retirement from NASCAR at the end of the season, and the Wood Brothers have announced that Matt DiBenedetto will pilot the number 21 machine in his place next year. In NFL news, it's week two, and this week the Giants play the Browns on Monday night, and the Jets play the Browns on Monday night. The Giants will play the Bills, and the Eagles take on the Falcons. In NCAA football, Clemson leads the AP top 25, followed by Alabama, Georgia, LSU, and Oklahoma. Ohio State, Notre Dame, Auburn, Florida, and Michigan round out the top 10. This week, Penn State plays Pittsburgh. Rutgers is off. As always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you can use it in your lives as well when he said, "Never let it rest until your good is better, and your better is best." If you have ideas for upcoming program topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGaneau83, or on Facebook on the show's page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Ganeau. And for more information about me and my businesses, visit www.jimganeau.com. I am Jim Ganeau, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody.
And I'll be taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I'll be taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business. And working overtime. What else?
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Rules governing a possible impeachment of President Trump approved by the democratically controlled House Judiciary Panel. A party line vote essentially setting parameters for how the committee would handle the impeachment proceedings. New York Democrat Jerry Nadler chairs the panel.
Under the procedures outlined in this resolution, we will hold hearings that allow us to further consider the evidence against the president.
The ranking Republican on the panel, Doug Collins, called it an unnecessary step designed to just keep the word impeachment in the headlines.
Today was simply to get you all here to cover something that is really, frankly, a snooze fest most of the time.
New Jersey could become the first state of the nation to ban vaping. The Senate president there saying he will propose legislation that would phase out all vaping products. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wade Alaroot for Amp Fest 19. Amp Fest 19 is the most entertaining political event and Trump Fest of the year. For any conservative who wants to be empowered and entertained, or for any Trump superfan who wants to just have a blast, if that's you, head to the Trump Doral Hotel on October 10th to 12th in sizzling, sexy Miami, Florida. Headliner speakers at Amp Fest 19 include Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Dinesh D'Souza, Charlie Kirk of the Turning Point USA, Brandon Straka of the Walkaway Movement, and of course, yours truly, Wade Allen Root. I love that guy. But this is more than a traditional political event or Trump Love Fest. Amp Fest 19 features a Texas Hold'em poker tournament, golf tournament, comedy night, pool party, yacht party, fashion show, movie screening, Women for Trump social, and prayer breakfast hosted by Alveda King. To register for Amp Fest 19, just go to AmericanPriority.com. That's AmericanPriority.com. It all happens October 10th to 12th at the Trump Doral in sizzling, sexy Miami. I'll see you there. AmericanPriority.com.
10 Democratic White House hopefuls will be debating tonight in Houston. Former VP Joe Biden taking center stage, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren on either side. And then there will be the 7 other hopefuls. Robbie Mook was campaign manager for Hillary Clinton back in 2016.
I think everybody has something to steal from each other. Biden's got to keep people at bay. Bernie needs to steal people from Warren and Biden. Yeah. To go on offense and grow, Biden needs to steal from both of them.
He was speaking on CBS This Morning. Business leaders demanding Congress take action on gun violence as the CEOs of 145 major companies have signed a letter saying that, quote, doing nothing about America's gun violence crisis is unacceptable. The letter is addressed to the U.S. Senate, pushing for a bill on background checks for all gun sales, also pleading for more red flag laws. You can keep up with us online by visiting usaradio.com.
America is built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
We told you moments ago that some CEOs have written to the U.S. Senate urging